All righty. Purim, Taf Shin Ayin. So our objective today is to come to a deeper understanding of that, you know, very often repeated phrase about the joy of Purim. The joy of Purim is described as Lehudim Haisa Ora, Simcha V'Sasam, but we're going to concentrate on those three words. Lehudim Haisa Ora, the Jews had Or, they had light. And we know that this light, what is light? Can't possibly be, you know, just physical light. There was some type of Or that the Jews merited to experience. I mean, they had art. You know, think about the sentence. Like, who's in my Ora of a simcha v'sason v'ikar? Now, that makes sense. They had simcha, a form of happiness and joy, sason, another type of happiness, and yikar, and a sense of worth and value and status. But what is or? What does that mean? So, well, our job is to figure out what this or is. And also, our job is to work with that strange, halacha, sort of Purim, that the Rabbanim have told us that we have one of the ways of celebrating Purim is Chayev Adam Lipsume Bepuria, person, which is translated as person has to drink on Purim, to the point that Ad Delo Yada, that they don't know the difference between Mordechai, Baruch Mordechai and Aro Haman, the blessings of Mordechai and the curses of Haman. So first of all, halachically, you don't have to drink so much, you just have to drink a little bit so you sleep. And also, what do we mean, ad delo yada? And you've heard a lot about this, until you don't have any das, right? So you don't know the difference between the blessings of Mordechai and the curses of Haman. Baruch Mordechai and Aro Haman. So, what's this ad delo yada? That's what we're working on. Lehudim Haisa Ora and ad delo yada. And, of course, the pasuk that we're going to work with is in the Megillah, pasuk tes, perek tes, pasuk of Zion, where it says, they're kimu v'kiblu, they were mekayim, and they accepted to celebrate Purim forever after. And the Gemara says, kimu v'kiblu doesn't just mean that they accepted to forever celebrate Purim, but kimu v'kiblu, they re-accepted the Torah. They had accepted it the first time in Yira in a state of fear, and now they accepted it me'ava in a state of love. But interestingly enough, kimu v'kiblu, you should say kiblu v'kimu, right? Kimu v'kiblu. It's just like, by the way, naseh v'nishma. First they were makayim it, then they accepted it. Very same thing as first we'll do it, then we'll understand what it's all about. Really you would think they should say kiblu, they accepted it, and then kimu, they were makayim it. But the reverse, they were makayim, and then they were makabil. So we're going to work with these ideas too. Okay, so how do we start? Lehudim Haisa Ora, they had Or. Well, if it was a spiritual light, where did it come from? Who was the spiritual leaders of the generation? Who taught them? Who brought them this light? Who illuminated to them this whole strange story that took many, many years, by the way, to play itself out? The whole Purim story was a 9-year event, and Esther had no clue why she was in the palace for most of that time. Mordechai was her, we're not really sure what the relationship was, but certainly her mentor, maybe her husband, maybe her uncle, maybe both, certainly her advisor and her mentor and her guide, and they didn't know why she was there. It was very odd that she was chosen from all the girls, and then finally, when this whole thing starts to play itself out, remember what Mordechai says to her, Mi yodea, who knows, maybe it's because of this that you're in the palace. So the Jewish people also, as the story was playing itself out, really didn't know completely, step by step, what was going on. And only in retrospect, Mordechai and Esther illuminated to them what was happening here. How all these random events came together. All the machinations in the palace between Haman and Ahasuerus. The Jews didn't know about that. How Hashem frustrated Haman's plans. They didn't know how it ended up that Haman was leading Mordechai around on a horse. They weren't there. They didn't know how it ended up, whose idea it was to put Esther on the throne anyway and get rid of Vashti. It was Haman's idea. So nobody knew this on the outside. Eventually it came out and Mordechai and Esther taught them, showed them what had really been going on. And it was a shock. All of a sudden they saw it in a new light. So who gave them the light? Right? Who was the story? Who, conveyed to them the R? Certainly Mordechai and Esther. right? And the end result was that they were makabel the Torah out of Ahava because they saw how Hashem had done everything for their good and had protected them and saved them, and they appreciated it. We're going to get back more into that concept. Now, that is why that Mordechai is associated with Moshe. Because if it's a Kabbalah Satorah, then Mordechai and Esther really are, in this case, the transmitters. And they're the ones that argued that this story of Megillas Esther should be included in Tanakh. By the way, it was not automatically understood that among the 23 Sifrei Tanakh, this one should also be the 24th, and then they should seal and the Sifrei Tanakh and say nothing else qualifies to be included in Tanakh. Because just think for a second, the story of Purim really has nothing in common with all the other stories of the Yeshuas of Klal Yisrael in the first 23 Sfarim of Tanakh. Because all the first 23 Sfarim are about open miracles, Kriyas Yamsuf and the Makos of Mitzrayim, and even in the time of the Shoftim and the kings of Klal Yisrael, there were great miracles like Sancheirav. The hail came, the Hashem sent a hailstorm on the army of Sancheirav that was surrounding the walls of Yerushalayim in the times of Chizkiyahu, and the Jews were in terror, and then they woke up the next morning and the entire army was dead. Or, for example, Yeshua walks around the walls of Yericho and they fall down. Or the two mountains there, come together in some form of an earthquake and squeeze, mash all the people that are on the side, and the war, the battle is done. Or David and Goliath. Like, all of these miracles of the first tkufa of Jewish history, which we've spoken about, right, dividing Jewish history into two tkufas, the first tkufa of open Nisim and the second tkufa of hidden Nisim, all the miracles of the first tkufa are open miracles, which are obvious and clear, that they prove the mastery of Hashem over this world and Hashem's interference in nature. And then, Moshe is the man of that era, the era of open Nisim and open miracles, and Nevuah, and communication between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. And then here comes Esther and Mordechai, who bring to Klal Yisrael in the second Kufa, the beginning of the second Kufa of Jewish history, which we've talked about, is going to be one not of miracles and prophecy, but of Torah that comes from inside ourselves, right? Of Torah Shebaal Peh that comes from inside ourselves, and all the values and ideas of Judaism and the millions of books that expand upon the first 24 Sfarim of Tanakh that comes from us. Esther and Mordechai to show them HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand and teach them their role. And Esther and Mordechai said, we want our Sefer included in the 20, in Tanakh. We want to consider part of Tanakh. And the Anshei Knesset Gedolah said, it's nothing like Tanakh. It's completely different. It's part of a whole new era, a whole new way of the Jewish people living. And in the end, they got their way. And Chazal saw this miracle as part, very similar to the miracles of the first Kufa. So Mordechai and Esther really are the transmitters of Torah. By the way, interestingly enough, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found every single one of the 23 Sifrei Tanakh and not Megillas Esther. Which means for a long time, even in the time of the Gemara, there was an Amora that they were still arguing if it's really part of Tanakh or not. That's 1,000 years later. Now it's considered definitely one of the 24 Sifrei Tanakh. By the close of the Gemara, it was decided it is part of Sifrei Tanakh. So we have to figure out more what happened here also. Mordechai and Esther's role, but they're associated with Moshe's role. They're two tkufas and two people that brought the Klal Yisrael to a point of Kimu v'Kiblu or Nasa v'Nishma. Right? So if Mordechai is associated with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Very interesting, going back to the first question we had about the R. Lehudim Haisa Ora. Well, when Moshe brought down the second Luchos that Klal Yisrael really did accept, Yom Kippurim, right, where they accepted the Torah Me Ahava with the second Luchos, just like Purim, again, with Mordechai and Esther, where they accepted the Torah again, Me'ava, you also hear about light. What do you hear about light when Moshe brought down the second Luchos? Right, so you listen to the Pasuk, and remember what we asked about Ad Lo Yada, right? So here's what the Pasuk says. When Moshe came down from the mountain, we are in Kisisa, Perek La Midalid, and here, and the Pasuk is Lamid, okay? Actually, Chav Tes. Vayihi beredes Moshe mehar Sinai, and when Moshe came down from Har Sinai, ushnei luchos ha'edos v'yad Moshe beredeto, and the two luchos of ha'edos, the testimony, tablets of testimony, were in his hands when he came down from the mountain. Umoshe lo yada ki karan or panav. And Moshe didn't know that his face, the skin of his face was beaming with light. He didn't know that this had happened when Hashem had spoken to him. Chavtes, Perek Lamed Al Pasuk Chavtes. So Moshe comes down on Yom HaKippurim, and he doesn't know, lo yada, that his face has light on it. Now, Rashi asks a very simple question. When did he get this light? Like, at what point? He was up there for a long time. When did he get this gift of light that was shining off his face? But before we answer Rashi's question, think for yourself. If you had to answer this question, Moshe's light face was shining with light. Where do you think the light came from? From what?
Inside.
Huh? Huh? After he learned everything. After Hashem spent 80 days teaching him, and he didn't eat, and he didn't sleep, and he lived like a malach. But look at Rashi. Now, how did you know that, Devorah?
Okay. I'm married. I mean, my mother's right here.
Okay.
She tells me everything.
Look at... Oh, are you there? Bad, bad, bad. Okay, look at Rashi. That is a bad, evil trick to do. Because nobody knows that. Okay, look at Rashi. Okay. Rashi says... Listen to the Rashi. Because you would think that the reason Moshe's face shone was that, you know, he was with the Shekhinah, right? So Rashi says, Ki Karen Or, he says that... Mehechan zacha Moshe lekarnei ha'hod. Where did Moshe get the zuchus? From what was the merit? Rabbeinu Amru, our rabbis teach us min ha'ma'ara, from the cave. Now listen to these next words. Shenasan hakadosh baruch hu yado al panav. Hashem put his hand on Moshe's face. Shenemer, as it says, v'sakosi kapi. I will cover your face with my hands. Flip back. Go back to Perek Lamed Gimel, the very last pasuk. When Moshe asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu, "Horeini nasdur es kvodecha, show me your kavod," he wanted to see more of the glory of a Kadosh Baruch Hu than had already been revealed in all of Matan Torah and all the time he had already spent up on the mountain. Now, at the very end, right before Yom Kippur, after so much close contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and being into enveloped, so to speak, in the Shekhinah, he wanted even more. And he said, "Horeini na kvodecha, show me your kavod, show me your essence." We did the Rambam here. Remember in the Mor Nebuchim? We read that Rambam that Hashem answered no, because the kavod is the essence. We only know the midos or the actions. So Hashem said no. But here's the words of Hashem, the actual words. Hashem says, "You can't lo yirani ha'adam v'chai," right? You can't see me. But he says, "If the haya ba'avor kvodi, I'm going to pass all of my kavod in front of you. V'samticha b'nikras atzor, I'm going to put you in some kind of crevice in the mountain." Now look at the next words. "V'sakosi kapi alecha ad avri," and I'm going to put my hand over you until I pass. So the first yesod is that the light on Moshe's face did not come from what he saw, did not come from the revelation of the kavod of Hashem, that Hashem showed him. The light on Moshe's face came from when Hashem covered his eyes and he didn't see. And he didn't see. He didn't have. He said, "Hodienina, show me." Right? Show me. And then he "Show me your ways. Horenina, Kodecha, show me your kavod." And Hashem didn't show it to him. He covered his eyes. And from there came the light. Now what does that mean? That is true, the light is coming from inside, but what does that mean? Now, think further. Is this the only time that there was light and Moshe's eyes were covered? And he didn't see the light from the outside. Well, no. There was light when Moshe was born, but there's a particular pasuk. Go back to Perek Gimel. And Hashem spoke to him, "Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov." Look at the next words, and this is a very important word for Purim. "Vayaster," where do you find the word "Vayaster"? "Vayaster Moshe Panav," and he he covered his face.
Who covered his
Moshe. Face? Moshe. In Perek Gimel Pasuk Vav. Vayaster Moshe Panav. He covered his face. Now why? Ki yare, because he was afraid. Mehabit El Elokim, from looking at Hashem. The Medrash says there, he did three things. He covered his face, he had yira, and he didn't look. So the Medrash says, Vayaster Moshe Panav, this is in Brachos Daf Zayin. Amar Shmuel Bar Nechemia Bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonasan, Bischar Shalosh Zachal LeShalosh. In the Schar of these three things, he was Zocha to three Madrigas. Bischar Vayaster, in the Schar of him covering his face, Zachal LeCluster Panim. That's the same word, Vayaster, Cluster, Esther. That was when he was Zocha to this radiance on his face, which came from Hashem covering his face. Because he covered his face. This schar kiyare, and in the schar of kiyare that he was afraid, what does it say? But when Moshe came down and his face had karnei ar, it says, we just read, by yiru, they were afraid to approach him because his face was light. Just like Moshe in the beginning was afraid to approach the sneh because it was a source of light that he couldn't look at. So, later on, he was the source of light that they couldn't approach and they couldn't look at from when Hashem covered his face. We'll make sense of all of it. And Bischar Mehabit, and this from the Schar of, from the last word that he was afraid, Mehabit El HaElokim, the reward was, as it says later on in Bamidbar, it says, the Tmunas Hashem Yabit. He saw the closest kind of, vision of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, let's put this all together and then relate it to Purim and the R of Purim. In the beginning, when Moshe arrives at the Sneh, Moshe is going to be the one that brings Torah to Klal Yisrael, Torah of the first Kufa, Torah of Nisim and Nebuah, Torah that comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu to us. There's a great, here in Moshe's experience, there's a great revelation that he perceives that's overwhelming, that he can't look at, and he covers his face. So that he is removed from all of this R, so to speak, and it can't reach him. And it's why, and the Pasuk tells us why he covers his face. He had tremendous yira, and he could not see it. He could not visualize it with his, with his body, with his eyes. It would overwhelm him. And what happened to Klal Yisrael when that light came down on Har Sinai, and they were forced to look at it? Parcha nishmasam. Their physical bodies could not absorb the experience of that much ruchnius coming in at them with such clarity. They could not absorb it. And that was really the truth that defines the first 1,000 years of Jewish history. The first Kufa. We asked this question last time and we go back to it too, because it has new applications and, understandings in Purim. We said if the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, so with the Matan Torah, as its symbol, was a time of intense revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through all the miracles and through all the endless prophets. And what was the goal of all of that? The goal of all of those open miracles, as Hashem clearly states in Mitzrayim, Laman Yedu, so you should know. Know what? I am Hashem, Shemayim Alva, Aris Mitachas, Einod. And we ask the simple question, did it work? Did for after 1,000 years of prophecy and miracles and 23 Sifrei Tanakh recording all of it, did it reach its desired end that the world and Klal Yisrael came to a point where they were makabel HaKadosh Baruch Hashem yimloch liolam voyer Hashem, and submit to the will of Hashem and the world as one, as we daven for, by the way, in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, is purified, as we say, we still are hoping. L'sakin olam b'malchus shakai, right? Did it happen at the end of those 1,000 years? The whole world was fixed, was perfect. Like Adam and Chava before the Chait, everybody serving Hashem, and the answer is no. And we talked about why. And this is the same thing as the sneh here with Moshe covering his eyes. Because any time the truth comes at us from the outside, and it's not from the inside, no matter how overwhelming it is, how clear it is, how shocking it is, how it takes away our bechira completely because the truth of it is so obvious, nevertheless, if it doesn't come from inside, it's not really lasting, as you see. We lost the, we did the Egel, then when we had the Beis Hamikdash, we lost the Beis Hamikdash, we lost the, it doesn't last, and it doesn't ultimately change people. Another way of saying it psychologically is when the knower and the knowledge are separate, you're dealing with a problem. Okay. So Moshe Rabbeinu represents the first Tkufa, covers his eyes because this information comes from the outside, and physically, he can't absorb it. It's overwhelming him. It's not consistent with his situation right now, with his spiritual madrigan right now. Later on in life, was he able to deal with that R? Yes, he was, because Moshe evolved too in Ruchnias in a tremendous way, and later on he could speak to Hashem Panim El Panim without having to cover his face, right? But in the beginning, it was way too much, and then he grew. Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai, we just said, Parcha Nishmasam. They could not handle it. The information was so overwhelming, but still, it came from the outside, and it was too much. Now, by the time you get to Purim, okay, to Mordechai and Esther, Purim is, interestingly enough, it's really at the beginning of the second Tkufa of Jewish history, right? But it's not really part of it. It's really a glimpse at Achras Hayamim. It's a glimpse at the end of the journey, the light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to tell you that you're about to start a whole new tekufa, and how it's all going to end, and what the purpose and goal is. Purim gives us a glimpse. That's why Rambam brings down, and you've heard this, that all the Yom Tovim are going to be batal, besides for Purim. I mean, that's big. Purim Yom HaKippurim is just like Purim. That's huge, right? That it's a glimpse of Achras Hayamim, Chuasam Hayisa LaNetzach. It's the only Chua that's eternal. Chazal see Purim as huge, huge, and very, you know, and very important, because it's really, as we said, it's an opportunity to experience Achras Hayamim. So, what's the journey? You might say, call it the journey goes this way. The journey goes from that light which comes from the outside and overwhelms us, eventually us growing to a point where we can absorb it, and it comes from inside of us. And it radiates from the inside. The Lehudim Haisa Ora, now we're going to try to understand this, is the R that came from the inside. Because in the Purim miracle, there was no prophecy and revelation and awe and shock and any of that. There was none of it. So the R came from inside. Now, when Moshe came down from the mountain, this R was radiating from him, and it did, Rashi tells us, it did not come from what he saw. Rather, it came because he couldn't see. Because he couldn't see, because Hashem covered his eyes. And he didn't know, Moshe lo yada, he didn't know that he had this R. What does that mean, that the light came from what he couldn't see? Which is a reference to Hester Panim. What is Hester Panim? Hashem says, Sakosi kapi ale, I'm going to cover your eyes as I pass by. So what is Hester Panim? When we try to describe that there's Giloy Shechina, a time when Hashem is revealed, and then there's Hester Panim.
We don't see.
Whose Panim are hidden in Hester Panim? We always think Hashem is hiding his face. Hester Panim is when Hashem is telling us, I am right here with you, but I'm not going to let you see me with your looking outside. I'm going to cover your eyes, and you're going to see that I was here, and you're going to see it from the inside. You're going to experience it. That's how your sight is going to develop. Not because you're going to see it happening on the outside. It's going to be a much more, it's subtler, but it comes, but it's much more powerful. The vision that comes from not seeing the hand of Hashem and the ways of Hashem clearly.
You're explaining it in a positive form.
No. Hester Panim means that Hashem says, I'm going to be there, and the Aver Kol Tuvi, all my goodness is going to be there, but I'm going to cover your eyes. It means Hashem is very close, but he's just not letting us see. He's covering our eyes. So there's a veil. So then how do we see it? It has to be brought out. That's that not having the name of Hashem in the Megillah. Esther Mordechai had to teach Klal Yisrael, enlighten them, and then they understood. So this is what we're saying now, that the greatest closeness and appreciation and the ability to be Mekayim Torah through Ahava comes not from when Hashem shows us and overwhelms us, and as we said, like the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, and the open miracles and all of that, not when it comes at us from the outside. The greatest light and love comes when Hashem doesn't let us see, and we begin to see on our own. Now let's think about this. What happened at the Eitz Hadas after they sinned? And where's Haman min HaTorah minayin? Where's Haman from? Hamin ha'Eitz asher amarti lo, right? That's famous Chazal, famous Gemara. So what happened after they ate from the Eitz Hadas? Vayipkechu einehem. Vayipkechu einei shneihem. Their eyes were open. What does that mean? Is that a good thing? How could you get a benefit from a sin? They ate from the Eitz Hadas, which is Haman, relates to this whole concept, and then their eyes were opened. So Rambam says in the beginning, opening sections of Mor Nevuchim, it can't be a positive thing, because you can't benefit from a huge violation. So it's a negative thing. So what do we mean that their eyes were opened? That now they could only perceive what they could see. And they evaluate things based on how they see them. And then, of course, you can get fooled. But what it's really saying in a more poetic sense is, as their physical eyes opened, their neshama eyes, their ruchnius eyes, were closing. They couldn't see anymore the Shechina that they were so aware of before that. The presence of Hashem all around them, which they were so aware of before that. Now they couldn't see that anymore. They saw, as we see today, you know, what things seem like to us, and not the emes, not the truth that's under the surface. So in another sense, their eyes were darkened. Their eyes were enlightened, they were darkened. When you get to Purim, which is a glimpse at Achras Hayamim, what we're seeing is that we're going to see, there's going to be bright light. In another way, what we're saying is that those eyes that closed back then are going to open up again, and we're going to see, and we're going to understand, and we're going to see everything beneath the surface. Now let's go into the Purim story for a second. Let's go into the Purim story. We say, the Chazal say that the Nisim at the end of days are going to make the Nisim of Pesach pale in significance. By the way, Adar is always, not just the last month, it brings Jewish history full circle. Pesach starts it, Nisan, right? And Adar, the end of Jewish history, is the end of the year. We always keep Purim Purim in Adar Sheni, if there's two Adars, to keep it close to Pesach, right? Okay. So the Nisim, Chazal say, of the end of days are going to make the Nisim of Pesach pale in significance. But the Nisim of Purim, like, where are they? So if you think about it, and we've mentioned this before, what type of Nisim were they? And why are they so much more effective? And why didn't the whole, you know, the first period work? So we said that, look at all the Nisim of Purim. Starting from the beginning, Haman had two agendas. What were they? He had two basic drives. To destroy Klal Yisrael, his arch enemy. He hated Klal Yisrael. And what was his other very... Yeah, he was definitely trying to hoard as much power and control as he could. He had two interests, okay? To build himself up and destroy his enemies. Every single thing that Haman attempted to do to further either cause boomeranged, right? And ultimately brought him down. Think about it just in a couple things. Who was the one who, because of his own desire for power, got rid of Vashti, in other words, clearing the way for Esther? It was Haman. Haman. By the way, David Foreman pointed this out. When Shmuel HaNavi says to Shaul, you didn't kill Agog, right? I'm going to have to take away your malchus. V'nasati l'reacha hatov mimeka. And I'm going to give it to your friend who's better than you. How many years later is Purim? About 500 years later, they put these words when they write the Megillah into Haman's mouth. Haman says, "Tachashverosh, let's take away her malchus v'nasata la reusa hatova mimena. We're going to give it to her friend who's better than her." In other words, Esther Mordechai is saying Haman himself, with his own desire for power and his own evil, he took the malchus away from Vashti, who was not a threat, and Haman, the great-grandson of Agog, gave that malchus back to the great-granddaughter of Shaul to finish the job and wipe him out. He did it, right? Everything he tried to do boomeranged on him. And then you know the rest of the Megillah. We don't even have to talk about it. Whose idea was... Listen, even think about this. He said to Achashverosh, let me pay you 10,000, you know, shkolim of silver. Achashverosh was just as bad, and he said, nah, you know what, you don't even have to buy the Jews. You can have them for free and do whatever you want with them. So he left the money in Haman's account. All right? Who in the end got all that money?
Mordechai.
Had Ahasuerus taken the money, Mordechai wouldn't have gotten it. Mordechai inherited Haman's estate. He got all that money. So everything they concocted to further their goals furthered our goals. And you know, he comes in the middle of the night, and who should you give honor to? And he go and he's the one dragging Mordechai around the city, singing Kachayas Elaish. That was his idea. So he should be built up, and he built up Mordechai. And then his daughter, thinking that it was Mordechai pulling around Haman, throws down the garbage, and it goes on his father's head. She tries to disgrace Mordechai. She disgraces her father, and the gallows, right? And then he thinks he has an ear, Esther's ear, so when she says Haman Haraze, he tries to plead with her, and then it looks like he wants to seduce her. The bottom line is, the story of Purim is, a nace, that they realize afterwards, is going to be so much more effective in its impact than all the nisim of the first 1,000 years. Why? Because when knowledge comes from the outside, and it overwhelms the person can't do anything with it, it can't really change them. Even Moshe wasn't ready for that light in the beginning, and he had to step away from it. However, knowledge that comes from the inside really illuminates a person's thinking and gives them clarity. The nisim of the end of days are simply this. Haman represents all our enemies and all those that wanted to, hate us and want to destroy us. The story of Haman is that the world will learn exactly what Hashem tried to teach the world in the Pesach miracles. And what's that? If you had to encapsulate that, Hashem basically had one lesson for the world with Yetzias Mitzrayim and all that. Not only Ani Hashem, but a little bit more than that. B'ni B'chori Yisrael. Or let's say it this way. Yisrael va'oraisa kutcha brichu chadu. There is Yisrael, and they're going to survive. And there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're not going to go against my will. There is no way you're going to thwart my designs. And there's a Torah which you cannot separate from Klal Yisrael, and will constantly enliven them and will connect them to me, and you can't ever separate Klal Yisrael from the Torah, or separate the Torah from me, or separate the three of us together. It's not happening. So Haman represents all our enemies. He's a glimpse at the end. What they're saying is, how many times do one person, one nation, two nations, 10 nations, all the nations who ever had the ability, have to attempt with all their might and all their creativity and all their manpower and all their resources, and in every way they can, to destroy Klal Yisrael or rip us away from the Torah, either this physical destruction or Gzeiras Hashmad, and realize that everything they did destroyed them and basically promoted us. Basically pushed us further along the path. Who put Esther on the throne? Haman. Who made Mordechai powerful? Haman. Who sent the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael through Daryavesh? Haman and Ahasuerus did. Everything they did promoted us. So at a certain point, when you look back, and it's a long journey, and you say, everybody that attempted to promote themselves and destroy Klal Yisrael, ultimately destroyed themselves and promoted Klal Yisrael. What happens when you just see that pattern over and over and over again? What do?
Develop insight.
You give up if you don't get destroyed first. Haman got destroyed before he gave up. That's also the story. The worst of our enemies will get destroyed before they have a chance to give up. But the insightful people along the way will say, no, you're not going to try that again. I mean, it's not even that we have to sit down and give you a course at a certain point on why the Jews do have a right to survive and why they are a worthy nation and why they have made many contributions. At a certain point, it becomes self-evident. You're not going to succeed in destroying the Jews, and if you try, you're going to be destroyed. By the way, the last of our enemies, Germany, the last of our big enemies that attempted it, really full-fledged, they're gone. They're depopulating at an alarming rate, and the nation is being overwhelmed with Muslims. And like America runs on Duncan. What is? Yeah, and Hitler killed himself. And what does Israel run on? German cars and German buses and German things. The point is, it's a pattern that's been repeated so many times. And we've come full circle. Guess who's going to make the last attempt? We have Iran. We're back here in Shushan. They're going to try it one more time. By the way, you know what would be a mashal for the Purim story? If they would launch a nuclear weapon, Chas V'Shalom, and it would It would, it would blow up and explode over them, right? That would be exactly in line with the Purim story, right? But that would be the Purim story. But that's what the Purim story is telling us. That's the inevitability. That's exactly how these stories play out. Now, how are we going to learn that Hashem loves us, and not only that Hashem loves Klai Yisrael and Klai Yisrael will survive, and there's no way a person can go against the Kadosh Baruch Hu? We're not going to learn it in Jewish history through big, great miracles like Pesach. No. That was for the first skufa. That's when, you know what that was for? Wasn't that didn't work. That was our education. That was our youth. That's when Hashem was teaching us. Through the prophets, through the miracles, Hashem spent 1,000 years basically fortifying Klal Yisrael with the knowledge and the trust and the understanding that of, you know, all the truths of the world. And then Hashem said, now, second skufa, now you're on your own. It's not that I'm abandoning you and I don't love you anymore and I'm rejecting you and that's why I'm taking away your prophets and taking away your Urim V'Tumim, taking away your Aron and taking away your miracles, taking away your Beis HaMikdash. Not because I don't love you, because you're on your own and these truths are going to come to the world through you. It's not that I'm not going to be there. I'm just going to hide your eyes. You're not going to see me fighting for you. And you're going to have to look more deeply. And when you look more deeply and you see what happens, that nobody, no matter how they try, can destroy Klal Yisrael or separate us from our Torah or undermine the plan of Hashem, you're going to know it. And you're going to know it because you lived it. And they're going to know it because they lived it. And it's their own experience that's going to teach it to them. And the light is going to come from that. And that's going to be a light that comes from the inside. And guess what? When that light comes from the inside, what happened when Moshe came down? Moshe lo yada, kikaran arpana, vayiru, and they were afraid. That, there was a fear on Har Sinai, but it was a fear of Hashem's power. You know what the eventual fear will be? The truth. The absolute truth of what Hashem attempted to teach us in the beginning, or started out. The truth that is born out through Klal Yisrael's survival, not just our physical survival, our spiritual survival. That will be the source of the fear. The light that comes from Klal Yisrael, look what it did in the Purim time. People were terrified. They were all Megayer because of the fear. In other words, when they see the will of Hashem played out through flesh and blood, through people, through bodies, through individuals, not from God in heaven, that brings the greatest awe and transformation that's possible. Now, that is why Purim, interestingly enough, is all about the physical. It's the ability to see Hashem from the guf, from the body, from the physical Jewish body and its mitzvahs. And its commitment to the mitzvahs. That's why we have the Suda, and we have the, and there's a lot of reasons for the Suda and the Matanas Levyonim, but it's the opposite of Yom HaKippurim, right? It's like the reverse side. It's all the food and the fun and the physical and no name of Hashem. The lesson is that that's how the Or actually comes to the world in the strongest way. Through the human experience of regular Jewish individuals who survive despite the fact, survive physically and spiritually, that the fact that they want to kill us, and also spiritually, we thumb our noses at them, and we survive in Ruchnias too. And, it, by the way, did you see the obituary in the New York Times for this woman, Yetta, what was her last name?
Schwartz.
She was a survivor of the Holocaust. She had 2,000 descendants, 200 grandchildren, and her endless great-grandchildren. I think she had a lot of 16 kids, so a couple died, but she had 15 living. Kinahara. Amazing. She's from Williamsburg, I think, Monroe. Anyway, the point here is this. Adelo yada. Let's just end with that. What's Adelo yada? Moshe lo yada kikaren arpanav. So Adelo yada, what does it mean? A person should drink so they don't know Mordechai's, the difference between the blessings of Mordechai and the curses of Haman. What does that mean? What we're really saying is, when the light comes from the inside, when the truth is self-evident because it's born out of our history, our life, our experience, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you talk about Mordechai's brachas, in other words, Klal Yisrael and the Torah Shabbat Peh that increased when we had no more Nevuah, or you talk about Haman and the curses and the enemies that try to destroy us. It doesn't even make a difference. Through both of those drachim, it became obvious that there's only one HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one Klal Yisrael, one Torah, and they go together. It's even the curses of Haman, the attempts of the Hamans of history that taught the same lesson. It doesn't even matter. The lesson came through them too, through their efforts to destroy us and through our efforts to keep building Torah. The lesson came both ways, parallel tracks. They're not destroying the lesson. They're not fooling or confusing the world. They're teaching the lesson through their own experience. So you don't have to know. You don't have to have any das. In other words, you don't have to write an essay and give a discourse. It just becomes self-evident. They're everything everybody does, the good Torah of the Jews, and all the evil of the Rishayim, it's all the same. It teaches the world one lesson, and that's the lesson that we start out all of Jewish history with. As we said, you know, the Hashem's, you know, Adnus, Hashem's mastery of the world. It doesn't even matter which way it comes, it's going to come. Now, we once mentioned this, and we're going to end with this idea. You know, we always talk about Purim as a day of reversal, right? It's a Nahapochu. By the way, let me tell you something very interesting. I just heard from Rabbi Bashan, cute little thing. With the lottery and the reversal, how do you think he picked lots? So he wanted to make sure that it was really, you know, solid, that, you know, he wasn't just picking some random day. So he had a box of, say, 365 lots for 365 days of the year. And then he had a box of 12 months. So let's say he picked day 200 and the first month, it wouldn't jive. It would have to be day 20 and the first month to make it make sense. So when he picked, you know, when it says that he picked the day and the month, it means that it worked out like that. So he felt it was very, you know, auspicious. But then somewhere, there's something on the Megillah, Medrash something says that he threw dice also. Right? You ever heard this one? That he threw dice? Rabbi Ashton told me this, so I said, I also didn't know the source of it, but he had seen it somewhere in a sefer. And the dice came out on 3, 3, and 1. Okay? So we know that with the way dice are made, each opposite side equals a 7. So the opposite of the 3 is the 4. And what's the opposite of the 1? 6. So he had 3, 3, and 1. What's that? Put it into gematria. Aleph, Gimel, Gimel. Who's that?
Agon.
And so what's on the other side? 4, 4, and 1. What's that? David. So he said, oh, as long as Agog is on top and David's on the bottom, we're good. But v'nahapochu. So I said, that's all really nice, but there's one major problem. What's the problem? David was not the factor in Purim. It was the children of Rachel and Esther and Shaul and the children of Binyamin, and not Mashiach ben David, because Mashiach ben David is for Eretz Yisrael, and Mashiach ben Yosef and Yosef's children and the defeat of that's all. It had nothing to do with David. Anyway, the point is, he was trying to say v'napochu. But the thing is this. The Napocha, we say, everyone thinks it means inside out or upside down. This is, you know, in Pirkei Avos it says, Hafochbo vahafochbo, turn it around and turn it around, and you'll see everything. Hakulabo, it's all in it. That's the var, that's the concept. It's like where you have we mentioned this last year, you put a line, or you draw a line on the outside of a sphere or a ball, right? There you have no choice. It always comes back to the beginning. That's Jewish history. Jewish history is not a linear line that you could fall off the side or it'll turn to the right and never it'll get to its goal, or it'll turn left and it'll never reach its destination. That's not Jewish history. Jewish history is just keep turning it. Just keep turning it. Let the Goyim do what they got to do. Klal Yisrael do what they got to do. It doesn't matter. It's all going in one direction. That's the secret. And when everybody realizes that R is the R that comes from the inside, the R from the fact that we're not overwhelmed by Hashem's, you know, shock and awe, but we learn it on ourselves. That's the bracha of the Hester Panim. By not letting us see big, huge miracles, we begin to really see that everything is all going only in one direction, and there's no way to stop the train, and there's no way to take it off track. And the Goyim help us too. The Goyim are contributing to this completely, whether they like it or not, whether they know it or not. Everything they do contributes to this. It's all going in one direction. And you can't stop this, you know, this force. And as long as we hold on, you know, as tightly as we can and be part of this movement, then we're guaranteed that the ultimate Yeshua will take place. And as we said, Esther is a glimpse, the story is of the future. Chazal say, everything else will be batel besides this. What that means is, this type of recognition of Hashem that comes from inside will make all the other stuff unnecessary. and will be the most long-lasting and the most transformative, because we're the source of it. Our own knowledge drives us and our own understanding, and that brings us to such a love, such an ava, Kabbalah Satara mi ava, which is the Madriga of Purim, that that will never, we never have to fear after that that there'll be another downfall, another, you know, Cheda Egel, another Golas, nothing after that. Okay. Have a wonderful Purim, everybody. An easy fast today.